Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, today we've got a little bit of something different in the way that we're going to be talking about a different type of power, yes. But it's going to be about top secret places governments don't want you to know about. The book is titled Keep Out. Nick Redfern is my guest. Nick has been on with me before. He's been involved with all kinds of things. He was on the air with me, and we talked about the NASA conspiracies and other things. And he's just such an interesting guy. He digs up all of these unique items of information. And if you're a conspiracy theorist, well, I think you will enjoy this quite a bit. Nick, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thanks, Donna. Thanks for having me back on again.
Well, it's a delight. Nick, what do you think makes you excited? Explore these variables that, my goodness, they're always controversial, which makes them a wonderful aspect for conversation. But what is it that pushes your buttons?
Well, you know, I think it's sort of the lure of not just the mystery. You know, everybody likes mysteries, but I think, you know, with a lot of these unsolved mysteries, the potential stakes are so high. You know, when it comes to possibly solving the nature of what are UFOs or possibly even finding out the truth of Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster. For me, it's not just a lure, adventure, or mystery. It's the fact that, you know, we could potentially uncover some life-changing mystery, you know, that would be the biggest story of the century even or the millennia. So I think it's that. It's, you know, the stakes are so high, the potential revelations, it would be so groundbreaking, if you like, that we need to look into these things.
With you, when you are exploring these various aspects of information, using that word, the details that have to be verified. I mean, talk is cheap, let's face it, Nick. And lots of times people get way off in la-la land with all kinds of theories. How do you keep yourself grounded? And how do you determine what is fact and what is written by Ding Dong Charlie at the local hamburger joint?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a good question, Donna. And, you know, when you're dealing with some definitively paranormal, supernatural, or conspiratorial mysteries, you know, you have to tread very carefully. But, you know, my background was, or still is in literal terms, you know, in regular journalism. So what I always try and do is approach any story, no matter how weird, but apply regular journalistic techniques. That's to say, you know, you try and get the source to speak on the record, which unfortunately sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with very controversial stories and a person may be reluctant to have their name attached to it for fear of ridicule, etc., or if they've got, you know, a job of responsibility or whatever, you know, that can be difficult, but I always try and get people to speak on the record. Then I try and find backup corroborative sources, documented evidence, you know, visit the area and ask around town, you know, in the local stores and things like that, if anybody knows anything. And, you know, treat it just as you would treat, say, for example, you know, you're following a murder case for a newspaper or a magazine or something like that. It's, you know, the nature of the event might be weird and different, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't approach it in a sort of a logical, regular news gathering way, I think.
Do you ever find that when you're doing this investigative work, that you really hit roadblocks that hinder you from being able to get the information that you may require?
Well, yeah, I mean, that does happen, unfortunately, more often than I do. You know, I prefer it, Donna. And sometimes it can be for several reasons. You know, when it comes to things like UFOs and military personnel who've had UFO experiences, you know, a lot of these people are very reluctant to talk about the events when they're actually still in the service. So in other words, you might find somebody, some guy who now is in his 80s or late 70s had a UFO experience when he was in the military in his 20s, but waited 50 or 60 years to say anything because of fear of, you know, speaking out of turn or losing, you know, pensions and that sort of thing after retirement. So they stay quiet. And it's only, you know, in later years I think, well, what's going to happen to me now? Now, of course, when that does happen, and it happens a lot, you know, it can be very difficult to deal with a case at 60 years old, you know, kind of going back to regular journalism, kind of like if you're investigating an unsolved murder from 60 years ago, a lot of the people are gone, you know, and how do you find out? So that can be a stumbling block, but that's just a normal, everyday stumbling block. Now, there are, I guess, conspiratorial stumbling blocks that I've found occasionally where, you know, I've uncovered the bare bones of a very intriguing UFO story, for example, and tracked down military people who, with a pretty high degree of certainty, I can say were involved in the event, but they're just like, no, I don't, thanks, but I don't want to talk to you. Or in some cases, you know, where they've outright denied even being at the relevant base until I've pointed out, you know, that their picture happens to appear in the, you know, the yearbook of the base personnel. And then they're like, well, okay, I was there, but I just don't want to say anything. And of course, you know, in that sort of situation, there isn't really much you can do, you know, short of putting somebody at gunpoint and saying, tell me, you know, and that's just a ridiculous, you know, that's not going to work anyway. I mean, and to stress, not that I would do that anyway, but, you know, it is difficult because there are, you know, a lot of wildly different reasons why people don't want to speak out.
Well, I know that when you're in the military, that there often is a statement that you have to sign that you will not reveal information. I knew a gentleman that had served for I don't know how many years, and he was always astonished, and this gentleman was in his 80s, and he said he was always astonished when military personnel were coming forth with details about certain situations. He said, we took an oath. You could not at any time, civilian, didn't make any difference, reveal information. And he had been involved in an intelligence area himself. So for many of these people to come forth at that time in their lives, they obviously have information that they feel they must share, that they cannot live with anymore, or if they feel they're going to be dying soon, nobody, who's going to bother with them in their 80s? They say, who cares? So it's really quite an interesting situation that we're in right now, because a lot of things are coming out that were hidden for so long.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're quite right. When you get to these old cases as well, by the time these people are in their 70s and 80s, they are more of a mindset of, well, you know, nothing's going to happen to me now, too far is gone. And unfortunately, the main reason why nothing will happen to them is, the main reason is, you know, the evidence, whatever the evidence might be, it was buried long ago. And, you know, our chances of now tracking it down get less and less every year. So, in other words, I think that's one of the reasons why when military whistleblowers or people come out under their own name and talk about their very significant UFO experiences from decades ago, the reason nothing happens to them is because, number one, the government or the military has the information buried so deeply, which, and they're confident, and unfortunately they're quite, you know, right, that, you know, we're not going to get it that way. And of course the other reason is that to take any action against the person telling the story actually legitimizes the story by default. So for the best approach for the government is to say nothing and patiently hope that, you know, it just goes by the wayside over time, and the UFO community isn't able to find anything on it.
Let's talk about one of the sections of your book, and this is about Australia. And I was really, really intrigued by the story. The title is the chapter is titled A Land Down Under. And you talk about an area called Pine Gap in Australia. Secret surveillance. Let's chat about Pine Gap. What is it? How did you become aware of it? And did you actually go to Australia to do your research?
No, I actually didn't. I mean, that was I didn't quite have that sort of budget to do that, unfortunately. But Pine Gap is an interesting place. It's I mean, Australia is a very huge piece of land. You know, it's a massive area. And most of the cities are sort of populated around the coastal areas. So mm-hmm. in other words, you have this huge expanse of desert and scrubland and, you know, outback, as they call it, and forest land that really a lot of people don't sort of delve into, particularly when you have, you know, very pummeling high temperatures for a lot of the year. And that's why Pine Gap was built, you know, sort of in the heart of these wastelands of Australia near a town called Alice Springs. And Pine Gap is basically the Australian equivalent of the American National Security Agency. And its role, basically, is it's like the eyes and ears of Australia on the rest of the world. You know, it's responsible for listening in on and eavesdropping on sort of foreign intelligence communications, like, you know, faxes, emails, telexes, phone calls, that sort of thing. And also, military communications, you know, on potentially hostile nations. And this is basically what the National Security Agency does in the U.S. And there's also a British equivalent called the Government Communications Headquarters, GCHQ. And, you know, unlike agencies like the CIA and the FBI who send agents out into the field, you know, to spy, etc., the NSA is pretty much all sort of intelligence gathering via high-state technologies, you know, spy satellites, that sort of thing. But what's interesting about Pine Gap, as I point out in the book, is that the base has actually been the site of a number of intriguing UFO encounters where people have reported seeing UFOs reportedly coming out of what looked like kind of like ground-level hangar doors. In other words, as if they slide horizontally. In other words, as if there's some sort of underground aspect to Pine Gap. And, of course, you know, when you have a situation where you have a secret or classified base dealing with surveillance issues and UFOs are seen in the area, you know, I do sometimes wonder if what people are actually seeing are not literal UFOs, you know, that we know are flying around, but could the Pine Gap UFOs actually kind of similar to the, you know, the stealth drones and these pilotless drones that we're seeing more and more in the news today, mm-hmm. like the one that came down in Iran recently or landed, you know, depending on whose version of events you accept as being genuine. But I think, you know, the more and more our technology advances, and particularly in the field of surveillance, it's going to become more and more difficult to determine which UFO is, quote, theirs and which is ours, you know. And I think some of these more exotic-looking things we're seeing today could well be sort of next-generation pilotless drones, you know, that to an extent are still on the drawing board. And that may well account for some of the Pine Gap ones as well.
Well, one of the things that happened at Pine Gap, too, is you have this fabulous story about four women mm-hmm. who, two women and two men, Adele Goldie, Jim Dowling, Donna Mulhern, and Brian Law. And this was a group called Christians Against Terrorism. Mm-hmm. And, boy, they were really a thorn in the government's side because they decided they were going to go on site there. And you have the information about the case. It's just absolutely fascinating.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is one of the things, you know, about that I always warn people, you know. I mean, my approach, as I said, has always been to do things from, like, a regular journalistic perspective. But, you know, when I understand people want answers, but, you know, when you start sort of invading base perimeters and things like that, particularly in today's world, you know, you are really dicing with, I won't say death, but you're dicing with a lot of big trouble, you know. And I think that this certainly, you know, is typified in the case you're talking about, where these people were basically arrested and the, you know, the Australian government really wanted to sort of throw the book at them and, you know, give them the sort of ultimate punishment of significant jail time, which ultimately didn't happen. And eventually what happened was that, I mean, the prosecution team were looking, you know, for the four to serve prison time and major fines, et cetera. And it basically came down to how, I guess, different people interpreted the laws surrounding, you know, what was going on at Pine Gap, et cetera. The the law that the government wanted them basically prosecuted around was basically to do with the sort of defensive or offensive nature of the work undertaken. And, you know, the Australian government wanted the four arrested for violating defensive laws. But the other argument was, well, that if Pine Gap spying overseas, that's sort of offensive, you know, overseas, not domestic or defensive. So eventually what happened was that the case collapsed and actually didn't spend any time behind bars, and even the fine was dropped as well. And so, you know, it demonstrates that it can be a very dicey thing, you know, to sort of go out there and actually, you know, try and penetrate these installations. I mean, ironically, I don't recommend people do this, because, you know, I try and get all the information I can from verifiable, on-the-record sources, government documents, etc., because sort of outright sort of violating the law to get data is just asking for nothing but, you know, complete headaches. And, you know, it's often it can massively backfire. So, you know, I don't actually recommend people do it that way. I recommend people sort of diligently use regular normal methods, as we would any story, but then put together the best picture you can and put it out there for people to see.
Well, I find so much of what you have in your book is extremely intriguing. And one of the sections in your book has to do with creatures of the cave. And I went into that chapter and I looked at it and I said, just at the beginning when you were talking about it, and I thought, creatures of the cave, all right, what are we going to do here with this? What kind of information are you going to share? Because living in a cave is not the best experience in the world.
No,
and
it's not.
To imagine somebody doing that and that there are people or a grouping of people living in caves. But you said there was a particular place in 1942, there was Brad Steiger talked about a certain incident, and that a number of the miners just disappeared without a trace. And there was some kind of a person, if you will, we use the term a being, that was very bulky. This is how it was described. You've got the Shaver mystery. What intrigued you about these stories?
Well, I think more than anything else, Donna, it's the fact that these stories are so prevalent, you know, that they're so popular, and you know, they've been part of human folklore, culture, mythology for as long as, you know, we've been able to sort of tell stories, and, you know, the written word and orally passed down folklore and tales, you know, through the generations. Every culture around the world pretty much has stories of sort of enigmatic beings and strange creatures that sort of semi-resemble the human race, that live apart, but that live apart from us in deep caverns and caves, and kind of, in many respects, are described as being far more in advance of us, but and that occasionally surface, you know, and interact with us. But that are, for the most part, keep away from us, you know. And we're not sort of talking necessarily about just living in sort of dank and, you know, cold caves and shivering. You know, we're actually talking, according to some of the witnesses, you know, extensive deep underground caverns that have been sort of fashioned into highly sort of futuristic type environments. And, you know, one of the most prevalent theories is that, you know, before the human race came along in its current, you know, incarnation of Homo sapiens, you know, we've gone through various different areas, if you like, Cro-Magnon man, Neanderthal man, you know, now we're Homo sapien. But the theory is, you know, that possibly there could have been another offshoot of the human race tens and tens of thousands of years ago, maybe even longer, who elected to move underground, and that possibly a lot of these legends of strange creatures occasionally coming surfacing out of the old mines and caves, like the one Brad Steiger talked about, which was in Arizona in 1942, you know, that they could have some basis in reality, and that what we're seeing or hearing aren't sort of just folklore-based tales, but actually accounts based on real experiences with some sort of underground civilization.
The Doomsday Bunkers of 2012. I love that title. By golly, there's been so much doomsday stuff about this year. People have just had a unbelievable good time with telling about how everything's going to end in 2012, which it may for some people, but for the majority of the population, it won't. However, I was intrigued by the very first chapter, paragraph, where you talked about Dick Cheney, how he was secretly whisked away to an undisclosed location with the event of September the 11th, 2001, and that investigative reporters really wanted to find out where he was. The aspect of where did they take him was very, very important. So tell us about these doomsday bunkers, because this is not the first time I've heard about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, with the whole issue of 2012 literally on the horizon, now we're in 2012, you know, we have these stories and beliefs of the Mayans that on December the 21st, 2012, that will basically signify the end of the latest cycle, as the Mayans called it, in the human race's existence. Now, it's this term cycle that's got a lot of people sort of worried and up in arms over what it means and what might happen. Now, contrary to what a lot of, you know, movies and stories, etc., have said, you know, the Mayan chronicles, if you like, don't actually talk about at all, you know, sort of the world coming to an end or the planet being pummeled by tsunamis and earthquakes and comets hitting the planet and earthquakes and floods or anything like that. They just say it will be the end of a cycle. And the Mayans believe the human race developed in cycles, you know, and if we didn't do too well in whichever cycle, then we would move on to the next one. So this has led, certainly in some quarters, to the idea that, you know, disaster's on the horizon, but other people feel it may be like a spiritual cycle, you know, and a shift in the mindset of the population, not necessarily, you know, 200-foot high tidal waves pummeling the planet. But what is interesting is that all across the world, a lot of the major nations in the last 3, 4, 5 years have actually been working on sort of like a program to massively expand and fortify a lot of their secure military installations. Now, on the one hand, you know, people have said, well, that's just due to the fraught state that the world's in today, you know, with fears about things like dirty bombs, which are, you know, legitimate fears. And, you know, they're just fortifying things and getting things ready for a worst-case scenario, but hoping for the best, which, you know, is entirely possible. But, you know, one of the things I also pointed out in the book is that the very fact that these installations are being added to and extended deeper underground, certainly within 2012 conspiracy areas of research, there's a great debate that's been going on for a long time as to whether or not there are certain people in government who either know something bad might happen or simply suspect or worry that it might, and so they're not taking any chances. And, you know, they've gone on these crash plans, if you like, to try and really expand and fortify these places. I mean, the Russians have several, for example, in the Ural Mountains, one of which we know is built into a mountain, and it's protected by more than 1,000 feet of granite. You know, there's sort of incredibly huge and expansive and underground places where we just don't know what's going on there, which can house literally tens of thousands of people, you know, with circulated air and enough food for months and months. And, you know, it sounds like something straight out of a James Bond movie, you know, some right. James Bond villain has this underground lair. But they're actually not, you know. The reality is these places exist, and, you know, the big question is, of course, is something looming, or is it just a case of, well, let's just upgrade our systems in case, you know. And I guess the good thing or the bad thing, depending on how you look at it, we're not going to have long to wait before December 2012 comes around. So.
Right. Now, you talk about Norway in your book and how there is a politician that was unnamed, but this came out in 2010 where he talked about how difficult things will be between 2008 till the year 2012, and the Norwegian government is building more and more underground bases and bunkers, and it said for the protection of the people of Norway. Israel's doing the same, and he goes on to talk about the protection of food and seeds, and that It's just absolutely fascinating to me.
Well, this is actually a true story. I mean, the Norwegian government has established something. It's called the Svalbard Global Seed Vault, and it's actually located on a Norwegian island called Spitsbergen in Scandinavia, obviously. And basically, as far back as 1984, what was called Norway's Nordic Gene Bank was sort of quietly collecting seeds of, you know, all sorts of plants, fruits, vegetables, etc., and storing them in an old mine on Spitsbergen. But what's happened now with this Svalbard Global Seed Vault, this is a far more ambitious project. It's basically kind of like a well-protected installation that extends 400 feet into and under a mountain on the island. And it's known today as the Nordic Genetic Resource Center. And it's literally home to more than 1.5 million different types of seeds, you know, whether, as I said, plants, flowers, fruit, crops, etc. And, you know, it's basically kind of like a static Noah's Ark, which can actually safeguard its sort of its cargo for years, you know. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the big question is, again, is this really just a case of the government's planning for a worst-case scenario, or are the people in government who, you know, believe or know that something's happening and that it's vital to get this place up and running? Regardless of which answer is the correct one, it is intriguing that, you know, we see another example, never mind Russia or America or Britain or whatever. Now, you know, the Norwegians are getting in on this issue of, you know, just saving and storing as much material, if you like, deep underground in the event that it might be needed, you know, to sort of reinvigorate and start over again, possibly.
Fascinating, fascinating information. In the book, Keep Out, that Nick Redfern has put together, he's got information about weather, how maybe there are things working to affect the weather. And there's just information about microbiology and how it can affect people and all kinds of information, secrets of World War II. Well, and so much more. The book is really a fascinating read. And as a journalist, he has done a lot of investigation and presents information that he hopes you will be interested enough to question a lot of things that he has been interested in questioning. Nick, what is your website that people can go to find out more information about this book, Keep Out?
Sure. People can contact me and learn more about the book and all my books at nickredfernsbooks.blogspot.com, and people can contact me there, and I'm always pleased to, you know, chat with people or answer any questions that they might have as well. So.
That's Nick Redferns, and that's an S after Redfern?
Yes. Yeah.
Books at?
No, .blogspot.com.
.blogspot.com. Well, Nick, as always, you bring up some of the most interesting points of information, and it does create a challenge to many people, and sometimes truth is much stranger than fiction. So I'm glad that you're continuing to do this. He also has a wonderful book called The NASA Conspiracies, that those of you listening might be interested in as well. So check out his site, Nick Redfern's Books at .blogspot.com, and it's NickRedferns Books at .blogspot.com. Nick, thanks ever so much for being with me.
Well, thanks again, Donna. I had a good time. Thank you.
You're very welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment. When we come back, we have another guest that's going to be joining us. Don't go away. More good information to share. We'll be right back.
Tickets now on sale for the 2012 Conscious Life Expo, February 10th through the 13th at the LAX Hilton. Bringing together an eclectic community of speakers, panelists, exhibitors, artists, and visionaries for a four-day gathering of collective consciousness featuring over 150 workshops, special events, including TV British psychic Lisa Williams and visionary scientist and author Greg Braden, as well as the film festival, live music, Programa Latino, and three exhibit halls packed with healthy products and services. For ticket information, www.consciouslifeexpo.com.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo, Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I told you we had another guest today. Her name is Donna Gates. She's back on the East Coast. And I received her material just day before yesterday, and I am absolutely thrilled to share it with you because I think Donna has really gone forward a big step regarding nutrition and approaching it not just for, let's say, physical needs that you might have because of various things that might be bothering you, but because she also deals with blood types. I want to welcome to the show Donna Gates. Donna, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, Donna, you have two books that you sent me. One is called The Body Ecology Diet, Recovering Your Health and Rebuilding Your Immunity, and the other one is The Baby Boomer Diet, The Body's Ecology's Guide to Growing Younger. Now, your story was very interesting to me because this journey started due to the fact that you were quite ill. Will you share a brief version of that story with my audience?
Well, I had systemic candidiasis since I was a teenager from taking a lot of antibiotics. And that's very common. I took the birth control pill, too, so that increases estrogen. The antibiotics and the birth control pills create a yeast condition in the body, and then millions and millions of women have this story, but there's so many different things that start to go wrong in the body. So, you know, everything I ate hurt me. I had no energy. My hormones were out of balance. My skin was broken out unless I took the antibiotic. And, you know, it just was a mess. So I went on this path to find out, you know, an answer. And then along the way, I learned a lot of things and eventually met Dr. William Crook, who'd written The Yeast Connection. And I thought what he was doing was wonderful, but it didn't seem that his diet was quite right. So I basically put together a diet for systemic yeast infections. And because it's such a common problem in the body of almost everybody, no matter what is wrong with you, that the book actually made its way all over the world, and hundreds of thousands of copies have been sold. Tens of thousands of people have been doing the diet now. We actually are more than a diet, though. We really are a full way of life. Like, we have seven universal principles that body ecology is based on, and those principles can lead you to the answer for anything. So I use those principles, again, to show how to reverse aging. So it can take about 20 years off of your life, or if you're young, like 30 or something, you can prevent aging the way we've been experiencing it all these thousands of years.
In your book, at the very front, there is actually an evaluation section where you want people to answer some questions for themselves to see about certain things that they're going through. And I don't know of very many people that are like a Jacqueline that say, I feel sparklingly wonderful. There seems to be one situation or another. We have so many people that are contracting conditions that you didn't even hear about. Nobody mm-hmm. even discussed it 50 years ago. It was almost non-existent. And our lifestyles, pesticides, all kinds of things have come into our environment in the last 50 years or so. And the evolutionary patterning, if you will, for physiological stamina and strength seems to, even though we're living longer, seems to have created a major, major challenge for a lot of people, children especially, we're seeing a lot of this with, but mm-hmm. even people as they're getting older, they have things that really they shouldn't be going through physiologically, but they are. And there's a lot of components to it. There's just not a total black and white answer. So you really go into the fact that acid and alkaline is very important in the body system. Why is that?
Yes, it's very important because when we're too acidic, cancer grows in the body, yeast, viruses, these things that actually are sucking out our life force basically start to grow inside of us. So we're supposed to keep our body ever so slightly alkaline, and when it is, that's very critical for being healthy. And that is certain things like stress makes us acidic, the wrong diet, particularly a diet with a lot of sugar, alcohol, you know, wine, smoking, chocolate, coffee. There's a lot of foods that we eat that are making us too acidic. A lot of people think they're eating pretty healthy, but when I've asked them what they're eating, I find that they're making some big mistakes, actually, and they don't even know they are, that are causing them to age. And we actually have been accepting aging as if it's normal. It isn't normal. It's now some of our scientists are saying aging is just another disease. We're not supposed to age like we're aging at all. And yes, decades go by, but like I'm in my mid-60s already, and I actually feel and have more, I feel better than I did in my 30s. I have more energy. There's a lot of wonderful things about growing older, like you have much more wisdom, but if you're getting older and you don't have the energy and the vitality and the love for life that you had when you were young, that's not good. So I think, you know, and that's what I want people to understand, is there is a way to reversing the aging that's occurring. You know, I think I do a very detailed job of explaining all of that in the book.
Well, I agree. Now, you got involved with blood types, mm-hmm. and I know for a fact that this has value. For example, people that are of the O blood type, they often have problems with dairy. People that have a B blood type, like myself, dairy is not a big issue. The body mm-hmm. is much more comfortable with it. However, there are a lot of components in dairy products today that were not present, again, years ago, because mm-hmm. of different things we have become alert and aware of mm-hmm. that we thought were going to help out and keep, you know, the animals good and strong and this type of thing, and hormones and antibiotics, and all of a sudden it's kicking back now. There's a lot of information that is saying this isn't good. The European Union doesn't want to accept American beef because we mm-hmm. use hormones mm-hmm. and antibiotics to a particular degree. You have these issues that are coming more and more and more to the surface because even though you can't taste them, things affect you.
Mm-hmm.
The blood type, what turned you on to that?
You know, in my quest for my own health years ago, I actually met Peter Diadamo's father, Dr. James Diadamo, who had been doing the work. You know, Peter was probably a teenager of that when I first met his father. He turned me on to blood types, and I started asking for, oh my goodness, 34 years now I've been asking, well, at least 30 years I've been asking people, what is your blood type, and then getting all kinds of information about them. And I really do, I agree with you, there is something to blood type. It's sort of undeveloped, but I find that, you know, knowing a person's blood type helps me guide them toward the type of proteins that are best for them. It's very interesting to me when I started working with them, lots and lots of families whose children have autism, most of those children are blood type A. 8 out of 10 of them are blood type A.
Amazing.
They do tend, because an A's body tends to be more acidic than other blood types. And so I like to know a person's blood type, but other people say that's ridiculous. that's statistically, to me, very, very significant when you get a large body of people with a condition like that that happen to be blood type A. And, you know, A's have a tendency to be low stomach acid. That means that they can't digest protein as well, so they're protein malnourished. There's a study I found that shows that protein malnourishment raises cortisol. Well, that's going to even affect your personality. Someone who's always has higher levels of cortisol is going to be have trouble sleeping at night. They're going to tend to be perfectionists, worry warts. You know, that fits a lot of A's. If, you, mm-hmm. if people know their blood type, A's will be saying, oh, yeah, that's me. I'm a perfectionist.
I found it intriguing, and this is because of a personal association I have with someone who is a O blood type, and they are suffering from malnutrition. I know this.
Mm.
And they are a vegetarian.
Mm,
and I was really intrigued, you're going to know about your book, about how you tell those that want to be vegetarians that have an O blood type, because O's really need their protein, that you can use coconuts, and there's a kefir starter. And you actually, I have said that with the research you did with Dr. Adamo, that these were things that could help vegetarians. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that vegetarians have, is making sure that they get adequate nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, definitely. Yeah.
You know, I just, it's so, so very important. I've met a lot of vegetarians, believe it or not, that actually were fat, and they weren't in good health.
No, because they tend to, particularly you can see it in men first, but they tend to become more bloated. You know, there's animal protein. Who knows why on this planet we're supposed to be eating animals, but there's a lot of animals who eat other animals, and we seem to, most of us seem to need some animal protein. It doesn't have to be a lot, but a little bit is strengthening. It tends to raise testosterone. So men that are becoming vegetarians and not eating this animal protein tend to become a little bit feminized. They have more estrogen in their body, and therefore they're going to be more bloated and, you know, tend to put on weight.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Well, I know we're just about out of time here. I want to mention to our listeners, especially those of you that are in California, Southern California, the Los Angeles area, this is there's a wonderful event called the Conscious Life Expo that is going to happen next week. And Donna Gates is going to be there. And Donna, are you presenting at a certain time there?
I am at 1 o'clock on Sunday, and I'm going to be talking about the gut, because many people have gut problems, but also the effect it has on our mood and mind and memory and so on, and aging. And then also I'm going to talk a lot about candidiasis. So many people have yeast problems, and they're absolutely clueless as to what this infection is doing in the body, to the gut, and to the brain, to our hormones, and so on. So, yes, Sunday, 1 o'clock is me.
Now, again, for those of you listening, this book is very, very well done. And Donna Gates is the author. It's The Body Ecology Diet. I recommend it highly, because inflammation in the body is primarily what causes most illnesses. And what she talks about in this book goes a long way to helping you understand how you can decrease that inflammation. Also, she has another book, The Baby Boomer Diet, Body's Ecology's Guide to Growing Younger. Donna, I know we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with me. I hope we have a chance to connect. I'm in booth 704 while I'm there, and I hope we have a chance to meet.
Absolutely. I'll make sure we do. Thank you so much, Donna.
You are welcome, Donna. Donna Gates, again, The Body Ecology Diet and The Baby Boomer Diet. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for just a moment. We're going to be back right after this. Don't go away.
Tickets now on sale for the 2012 Conscious Life Expo, February 10th through the 13th at the LAX Hilton. Bringing together an eclectic community of speakers, panelists, exhibitors, artists, and visionaries for a four-day gathering of collective consciousness featuring over 150 workshops, special events, including TV British psychic Lisa Williams and visionary scientist and author Greg Braden, as well as the film festival, live music, Programa Latino, and three exhibit halls packed with healthy products and services. For ticket information, www.consciouslifeexpo.com.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm delighted you're able to join me. By the way, the list of the guests coming up this month, they're all now posted on BBS. I haven't yet had an opportunity to get my newsletter out. This is the first time in months that I have been so locked down with information, but I'm going to get that out as quickly as I can, and there will be information in my newsletter. And if you want to have this free newsletter, just get an email off to me. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com or call my office. Now, next week, I am going to be in Los Angeles at the Conscious Life Expo. The information is posted on my website. It's held at the Los Angeles Airport Hilton, LAX Hilton, and it is an incredible event. I'm going to be speaking on Friday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I'm also going to be there the entire weekend. I'll be available for mini sessions, and I'll be talking with authors and reviewing material while I'm there. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about brain power. Michael Gelb is going to be my guest. Michael is a researcher, and he has worked with research evaluating the brain and how we can become more efficient mentally. So often when we get older, people say, oh, well, I don't remember this. Oh, I don't remember that. Well, actually, the brain can be enhanced so that you don't have to get dementia when you're getting older. That's not necessary. And I know dementia is an illness, but I do think that there are things we are finding out about the brain, and it's information that is applicable to people of all ages. So that's going to be tomorrow. Then next week, we're going to start off the week with Betty Shoten, Liftoff Leadership. This is a woman that is a phenomenal entrepreneur. Her book is incredible. Then Joan Anderson is going to be with us. We're going to be talking about angelic tales. These are stories about animal angels. Joan is a sweetie. I've had her on my show before. She's just a doll. Because February is the month that Valentine's is so significant within, we're going to be talking about love next week as well, perspectives that Fatty Hattendorf has put together, and then we'll be talking with Daphna Sloan. Now, this is a woman that has really worked with kinesiology. How can you change the subconscious sabotage that does you in? You can consciously say you want to do it, but your subconscious really creates and makes happen so many things. So we're going to be talking about that next week as well. So we've got a fabulous lineup. Again, all of the guests upcoming are already listed on the site. Now, telephone lines are open. If you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call into. That is 888-627-6008. I like to share stories with you about people that have experiences that touch their hearts and minds in a very, very special way. And this is an experience that Kathy, a woman that is in Florida, experienced a real situation that for her made a big difference in her thinking and in how she approaches certain things in life. And this is what happened. In Florida, you don't think it ever gets cold, but it does. There are times when the temps really can be chilly for those people that live there all the time. Remember, they're accustomed to the warmer temperatures, not unlike the people on the Hawaiian Islands. So when it gets down to about, let's say, 60, they're freezing. They're putting on their down jackets. Well, there happened to be this one very cold winter afternoon, and Kathy was driving. She had her two children with her, and they were on the expressway in an area of Florida, and her tire blew up. Yep. Well, she was quite concerned. She pulled over safely to the side of the road, but she had her three-year-old and her six-month-old in the car, and she was just thinking, oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to manage it? It's the normal feelings that any of us would have. Well, as it happened, there was someone that saw the blowout. I followed her to the side of the road, and it was a young man. And here she is on the side of the road. Can't, you know, cars are whizzing by. And this young man says to her, after he checks and makes sure that they're fine, that if she would like, he'd be happy to change her tire. He said, I really don't want you and your family sitting in this car on the side of the road waiting for help. The weather's very, very cold. Well, Kathy was stunned. This is a perfect stranger. She didn't know anything about him. Well, he had her stay in the car. He changed the tire. And obviously, he had done this more than once because he knew exactly how to do it. And she was stunned. Within minutes, everything was fine. And she tried to get him to take some money. She said, let me pay you for what you've done. He said, nope. I don't want any money for it. I'm doing it because I want to do it. You and your family are safe now. Go right ahead and have a wonderful day. And he drives off after he gets in his car. And she said it really took her a while to register that a perfect stranger would be so kind and so helpful, because so often we're fearful, aren't we? Don't talk to strangers, all this kind of stuff. And she was helped by a stranger. And she said what impressed her about this act was his thoughtfulness, his concern, and his just, let's do this, let's fix this attitude. It had such an impression on Kathy that she decided that she was going to pass it forward, that whenever she could be of assistance to anyone at any time, she was going to do the best she could for that individual. That young man had a tremendous impact on her life, and it's also something that she's going to teach her children. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. You, at any moment, can make a difference in another person's life. How would you like that to happen? In what way would you like to demonstrate it? Well, why not put your best foot forward and your best effort forward? Be an example of the best you can be. That makes a difference. This young man, she never will know his name, will never know where he came from, where he lives. Doesn't make any difference. He made an impression that changed her life forever. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you were able to join me today. Tomorrow, well, we're going to be talking about brain power. Hope you'll tell your friends and you join me too at the moment right here on bbsradio.com, The Donna Sebo Show. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.